Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
Anticipating the President's speech.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The State of the Union is what? In recession? Heading for one? At least economically distressed. Tonight, President Bush will tell the country what he wants to do about it. What would you like to hear? Marketplace's Steve Henn talked to some commuters and tourists near the White House this morning to get their feedback.
Right now, many people like Anne-Marie Towne from Boston think the economy's in trouble, and she wants the Bush administration to do something.
We see this recession coming on, and I think that, you know, they should take responsibility and try to help people.
In the State of the Union, she'd like the president to talk about reining in abusive loans, and not just mortgages.
So I think credit cards are ruining the economy of this country because they, you know, rack them up and they end up paying 20-30%, which they can't afford.
But what about that stimulus package? What red-blooded American doesn't love a tax rebate?
$300, $600 is not going to make any difference to anybody.
Like most folks I talk to, Todd Allen doesn't believe the proposed tax rebates will keep America from tipping into a recession.
What we're suffering through now has to be done because people were doing stupid things like getting mortgages they couldn't afford.
But that doesn't mean Allen, or any of the dozen people in my unscientific survey this morning, volunteered to send their checks back. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
It's hard to know what Wall Street wants to hear right now. Last week, the Fed cut interest rates by the biggest amount since 1982, and it might cut rates again this week, but still, the selling continues. This morning, the Dow is down another 16 points to 12,190. The NASDAQ is about flat. The S&P 500 is down a point to 1330. Big losses in Asia today, though, about 4% for the Nikkei and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong. In Europe, the markets are down 1 to 2% so far. The price of gold moved higher today. It's flirting with record highs around $920 an ounce. One reason is the weaker dollar. But there's another issue. South African gold mines are shut down because of severe power outages in that country. Gretchen Wilson has more from Johannesburg.
The shutdown affects the world's biggest platinum producer, Anglo Platinum, as well as major gold producers. Each day without steady power costs the country's mining industry $27 million. South African officials have called the power cuts a national emergency, and they're scrambling to fix it with a mix of rationing and reduced exports to neighboring countries. Economists say the power cuts and the mine closures may have enormous far-reaching effects on South Africa. Experts say it will affect its currency, trade deficit, and ability to attract foreign investment. Dennis Dykes is chief economist at South Africa's Nedbank.
This is a crisis that really has to be addressed. At the moment, we are working on the assumption that it will be sort of a month-long problem.
Financial experts here say they haven't had so many panic calls from investors since the aftermath of September 11th. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Student loan provider Sallie Mae has decided not to go after the investors who backed out of buying the company. Today, Sallie Mae said it was dropping a lawsuit against private equity firm J.C. Flowers and other investors. Sallie Mae had been trying to get a $900 million breakup fee. Now it's going to focus on refinancing $31 billion worth of debt. This is the Morning Report for Monday, January 28th on Marketplace.org. Last week, we told you about the rogue trader who lost $7 billion at Société Générale in Paris. This morning, French prosecutors said he could face charges of forgery, breach of trust, and fraud. Stephen Beard has more.
Jérôme Kerviel's lawyers insist he's not guilty of fraud, that he was just doing his job, although he admits hiding some of his activities. His lawyers claim that the bank had tried to use him as a scapegoat to distract attention from its huge losses on U.S. subprime mortgages. But that manoeuvre had backfired. Martin Arnold of the Financial Times.
His lawyers came out and said any loss that resulted from this was the fault of the bank for selling his position in a hasty way in a falling market. If the bank had held on to his position, they would have ultimately not lost any money, is his claim.
But Société Générale says the trader had bet $73 billion of the bank's money on unauthorized investments and had covered his tracks by using other people's computer access codes. Kerviel told prosecutors today that he wasn't seeking personal profit, he just wanted to be an exceptional trader. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The perfect example of banks being afraid to lend right now is the Harrah's Casino deal. Last year, two private equity funds teamed up to buy Harrah's. They asked Bank of America and Deutsche Bank to come up with almost $10 billion to pay for the deal. Today's the day those banks are supposed to hand over the money, but they've had trouble getting co-investors. More now from Stacey Vanek Smith.
Investors usually love gaming company debt. Not in this market. Bank of America and Deutsche Bank had to cut the price on Harrah's high-yield loan by more than 3% to sell it. And Harrah's isn't the only deal that's been hard to shift. Mike Basevich is with Hartford Investment Management. He says banks are sitting on about $230 billion of this debt.
There's been some success in moving some of these loans, but it's been a tiny fraction compared to the corporate go-go days of just a year ago.
Basevich thinks the number of corporate deals will be cut in half this year. That could slow the economy. Steve Miller works for Standard & Poor's LCD. He says a bigger problem is that this risky debt is getting riskier.
There has been a pickup in defaults in January. We've seen three defaults. And I think what everybody's worried about is they're going to go from three defaults to 10 to 20.
Miller says he's not worried now, but he says a big increase in defaults could spell disaster for corporate America. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Most scientists agree it's too late to stop global warming. If that's true, seems like we need a backup plan. Today we kick off a series called Plan B on how we're adapting to a warmer world. While some people are looking for ways to reverse global warming, investors are already funding projects to help us cope with it. Reporter Nate DeMeo traveled to Australia, where climate change may already be worsening drought. Now many cities down under have their eyes on seawater.
Ross Young is a bureaucrat. He runs a semi-private consortium of all the water utilities in Australia. And for 20 years, he'd tell a cabbie or a woman he met at a dinner party what he does for a living.
They would have yawned and said, oh, water, that's boring. Who cares about it?
But lately, his social life is picking up.
Now, you mention you're in water, and all they want to do is talk to you about it.
These days, water is a dinner table issue in Australia. It's always been a dry place, but now the country's experiencing its worst drought in a millennium, and its rain patterns may have changed permanently. A couple of hundred people cram onto concrete bleachers on the beach at Prince Philip Island, a popular day trip from Melbourne. They're looking out to sea, trying to spot penguins making their way to shore. Last summer, a timely rainstorm helped avert catastrophe here. The island's taps had nearly run dry. And with communities all over the continent having experienced similar crises, it seems the whole of Australia is looking to sea for a solution. Nearly every major coastal city here has a desalination plant in the works. Almost all of Perth's fresh water now comes from the ocean. And soon, 20% of Melbourne's and Sydney's will too. But conventional desalination plants use an enormous amount of energy. And Australia is loath to follow suit.
It would be the height of irony if the response to climate change was to actually increase greenhouse gas emissions.
Wind, solar, wave, thermal, hot rocks.
Susan Truesdale is figuring out how to make Sydney's new plant sustainable.
Any sort of renewable energy proposals. We got 13 proposals in yesterday.
She says Sydney's massive plant won't increase the city's energy use or its emissions output a bit. It's the same story with Australia's other new plants, whether they're powered by on-site wind farms or offset by switching other utilities to green power. In Sydney, the average family will have to pay an additional $150 a year to cover that clean fuel. But throughout Australia, voters are willing to pay, and they're forcing politicians to choose sustainable options. The Australian public is obsessed with its climate footprint. It's been forced to be.
Australia is really the canary in the coal mine for the rest of the world.
That's water bureaucrat Ross Young.
What we're experiencing in Australia will begin to be experienced in the United States. I think your time will come when you will realise that the rainfall patterns of the past are probably going to disappear.
He says the rest of the world should follow Australia's lead and find ways to adapt to climate change that don't actually cause it. In Sydney, Australia, I'm Nate DeMeo for Marketplace.
Tomorrow on Plan B, Hans Brinker and the Floating Houses. Our series was produced in conjunction with the Center for Investigative Reporting.
Now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
New York State's plan to rescue bond insurance companies might come up a bit short. The state is asking Wall Street banks to chip in $15 billion to help bond insurers keep their top credit rating. But analysts say those insurers actually need about $200 billion. At the same time, Warren Buffett has decided to get into the bond insurance business. Let's run all this by Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. Alan, first of all, what happened to these bond insurers like MBIA and AmBank?
Well, they took what had become a slow-growing but very lucrative business, insuring municipal bonds, and these are companies that have publicly traded stock. And you know, Scott, if you have publicly traded stock, your earnings are supposed to go up every quarter, every year, possibly every minute. And since you couldn't do that anymore with municipal bonds, they said, well, gee, we have an expertise in understanding financial risk. And they diversified and ended up diversifying into things like junk mortgages, collateralized debt obligations, stuff like that, which have all now blown up and are threatening to eat them alive.
And why can Buffett do better than the companies that we're talking about here?
AmBank and MBIA are what's known as monoline companies. They did one thing. If you pull out the Berkshire Hathaway annual report and actually try to read it, you will go mad because it has a zillion businesses. It has large insurance businesses. It owns entire companies. It owns parts of companies. And all Buffett cares about is making the company as a whole profitable and productive. He can just stay in the bond business. And if the cycle turns, when, say, premiums go down, well, he can just get out of it because his bond business isn't subject to Wall Street, and he doesn't have to show Wall Street that his profits from insuring muni bonds increase every quarter. He's not wed entirely to this business, so he can be in it when things are good and can put it in sleep mode when things are not quite so good.
So could Buffett be creating a new model here for operating the bond insurance business?
Sure. Again, in theory, this is a business that's better owned by a conglomerate that doesn't have to push it. The thing about Berkshire is it's constantly getting bigger. It's got tons and tons of money, and Buffett does what Buffett wants, and Buffett doesn't care what Wall Street wants, and it's worked very, very well for everybody, including him and including guys like me who own stock in it.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day, Scott.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.